This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Love the Gas House Gang. All my friends are in today. My goodness, Chris Ranji is here. Bernie Miklas is here. Matt Pajeski is here. Frank Ladd is here. And Matt Pauly is here. Let's go to Jupiter, Florida.
Now, a St. Louis Cardinals spring training report. Sponsored by St. Louis Composting. Composting, growing gardens and making memories. And by Happy Roof. We always create happy endings on the voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
My man, I love that video. You know I did. I was all over that. That video of Yadier Molina showing Leonardo Bernal how to throw down to first and third made my heart happy. I mean, that is what it's all about right there. You take advice from the best maybe to ever do it, maybe. And you're Bernal, you're just like floating at that moment. That was pretty cool, Matt.
Yeah, it was a cool moment to be that's the great thing about spring and you get to like be in places that you normally would never be in before. I'm 6 feet away from Yadier Molina working with three of the Cardinals catchers. And if I knew Spanish, I could have understood exactly what they were saying. I don't know Spanish. I mean, that's how close you are to them. So yeah, I ran about 2 minutes of video of that today. That's on my Twitter at Matt Pauly on air, but it was cool. And I think everybody's really excited to have Yadi here. And he seems to be super involved. Like, this is not some sort of, you know, scholarship program to bring him around just so he can take some photos. He's very involved with what's going on right now.
Yeah, Bernie Miklas, you take that as long as you can take it. If Yadier Molina is willing to give, you take as long as possible. It sounds like Ollie Marmol is going to do just that.
Yeah, and I think it's credit to Ollie because some managers would be a little paranoid about this. You know, Molina is one of those forever Cardinals who's going to always have incredibly high numbers in terms of popularity. And Ollie is a younger manager. You know how that works. You know, sometimes it takes you a long time to kind of sell everybody over that you're the guy. So you're always, if you're an insecure man, you're going to be looking over your shoulder and you're going to, your instinct will be, no, this Yadi thing's probably not a good idea. But Ollie Marmol's the exact opposite. He's like, yeah, this will be awesome. Let's do this. He didn't care that it would prompt some of the media and some of the fan base to, you know, hit that sound machine again about how Yadi or Molina should be the manager, you know. I give him credit for that.
I agree with you, but I wonder if it almost diffuses that in a bit, because if he's got enough confidence to let the man come around, maybe it disarms it in a way. I don't know. I think it could go either way. People probably see him in a Cardinals uniform. You know, at times they see him in the dugout and they think, man, wouldn't that look nice to have him there permanently all the time? But also, I think the conversation that we had multiple times last year when some fans were clamoring for him to be the manager and saying that that's the way it should be. But what we talked about was just because a guy was really great as a player, that does not necessarily mean it's going to translate into managerial wins. He might be really good. We know he's a very smart baseball guy. He's one of the smartest. That doesn't mean that the Cardinals become a winner just because he's your manager. So I think we have to be very careful of that, too. And a lot of fans do understand that point.
Yep.
And he manages a bit. I mean, he'll manage the WBC team. He manages over in Puerto Rico. So if he's getting a taste of it, and now he sees what it's, you know, I think one of the reasons to have him involved the way he is he gets to get a front row seat of just what Ollie does on an everyday basis. So it's really good for Yadi for his eventual major league managerial career if he wants to go down that path to get the kind of experiences that he's getting with the Cardinals.
Matt Pauly's down in Florida. Matt, is that a peek inside the KMOX townhouse that we have there in Palm Beach County?
It was a little bit of a shorter day on the field today, so I was able to boogie out of Roger Dean just a few minutes earlier than normal. So yeah, right. We're at the palatial KMOX condo.
I love it. That's where I'll be living there for a couple of weeks. It's my first look at it, actually. I appreciate
there you
that.
Go.
I can't avoid this, of course. So, I mean, we'll get more into the team, but it's pretty massive news that Tony Clark is resigning as the executive director of the MLBPA. I'm just curious what the buzz is down there about that topic.
A lot of surprise, a lot of shock. Nobody saw that coming. I was sitting with Mike Claiborne, and he made a call right away to somebody that he knew to try to get some information. Very much does seem to be connected to the investigation into Tony Clark and the Players Association on that licensing money that just kind of vanished out the door. So that's it, it's a terrible time for it. I don't see how they go with anybody but Bruce Meyer at this point. And I don't think that's good, because as much as Rob Manfred and Tony Clark might not have really liked each other, I think there was some mutual respect. I'm not convinced anybody at Major League Baseball has any respect for Bruce Meyer. They just see this guy as a bulldog negotiator who doesn't really bend on anything. So I'm not trying to raise some red flags, but I honestly don't think that this is good news for the negotiation based off what I'm hearing. It startles me that this happened today.
Yeah, Bernie, what's your reaction to all that?
You know, it's one of those deals where I was surprised, but then the more I thought about it, I wasn't surprised. Because you remember after the recent collective bargaining agreement negotiations ended after 99-day lockout, but they could get the whole season in. But after that, there was a player uprising led by some people that obviously didn't think Tony Clark was very, very good. I remember Jack Flaherty was one of them, and I can't remember the others. But they basically, in effect, tried to overthrow Tony Clark. And that was a sign of trouble that perhaps the union wasn't entirely behind him. But that attempt to overthrow him was poorly organized, and it didn't get very far. But this Players' Way scandal, I got to admit, guys, I haven't paid too much attention to the details. But then, you know, reading a couple of stories, including the investigation that Jeff Passan and Don Van Natta did in the fall, this what a mess this is. Mm-hmm. And the word shady would be an understatement. I mean, there's some real, real red flags raised by that whole thing, where one estimate is that, you know, they've had about $10 million of the revenue coming in is very small, but they've spent as much as $10 million on various expenses. And it's like, where is that money going? Well, it was enough to catch the eye of the Eastern District of New York, which is a really, really tough law enforcement agency. And it sounds to me like that whole enterprise is going to lead to some serious repercussions. And I don't know whether Tony Clark is going to be personally implicated, but the timing gives you some thought that perhaps that'll be the case.
Yeah, I don't know how this is going to ultimately now affect the negotiations coming up. As Matt said, Paulie, you know, Bruce Meyer's expected to take over. Jim Bowden earlier was tweeting about that he's kind of a hardliner, that he's more of, I believe he called him a litigator and not a negotiator, which doesn't necessarily bode well for coming to some sort of compromise and some deal, so that we don't take this lockout deep into 2027. And maybe that doesn't happen. I still am holding out hope that while I believe there's going to be a lockout, and the rest of us, I think, are all in agreement on that, I'm still holding out the hope that it won't be that long, that maybe we can get through, I don't know, middle of spring training of next year, and they have something figured out, or they get close to a deal, so that you're not losing too many games, if any, for the regular season. Maybe just pushing the season back a little bit, as opposed to losing a bunch of games, like 2 or 3 months of the season. I'm still hopeful on that. Obviously, a lot of things could develop between now and then, though.
Yeah, and Matt, you're right on the money about Bruce Meyer. I mean, that's labor lawyer versus labor lawyer there. I mean, Manfred against Meyer. There is no, you know, reasonable respect on that side from the owners for Meyer, not even his players. Wasn't it, I don't know if you've already said this, I don't think you did, but wasn't it Meyer who was accused of, you know, siding with Scott Boras, and some of the players had suggested that he and Boras were side by side, and he even wrote a letter to saying this is not true. I mean, so there were fireworks going on a couple years ago. I mean, that's crazy. The timing of this is nuts. I mean, we'd sit outside the clubhouse right around this time, and Tony Clark would be holding court. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the players to be blindsided like this is just wild.
he was supposed to be in Cleveland doing that today, or not Cleveland, but at Cleveland's site in Arizona, doing that today. And if you also remember when that coup attempt took place with, there were some players who were fine with Tony Clark, but they wanted Meyer out. They wanted to play, replace him. I think the guy's last name was like Marino or something.
Yeah, Marino.
I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They wanted to replace him with him. So there's a lot of, you know, we've talked about this a lot, the factions, the big market owners and the small market owners needing to be on one side together. Then you have the big money players versus the rank and file players. Like this is a mess right now. And there's so many different factions. You got to get the two sides to get their stuff straight before the negotiations can even really start from there.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Matt, let me get back to the Cardinals. And what is the latest news down there based on your chats with Holly Marmel and others today?
Two notable things today. First off, it is official. Matthew Liberatore will be the game one starter for spring training play this Saturday when they open up Grapefruit League play right here on KMOX. And then the second thing is Riley O'Brien is dealing with some lower body issues right now. They don't know if he's going to be able to participate in the WBC. So we should have more information on that probably tomorrow. This is kind of a brand new thing, but O'Brien's WBC status very much up in the air. And we know about his injury history. So if you're the Cardinals, I'm sure maybe deep down somewhere, you would almost rather him not participate in the WBC, pitching those high leverage innings without being fully ramped up. That's before he was even injured. Oliver Marmel talked about the challenge of somebody throwing high leverage innings this early on in camp where your body hasn't been ramped up to that point. So they were already worried about that. And now he's got this lower body thing. So keep an eye on this here moving forward.
Yeah, that's a good point. Bernie, the Cardinals, if they do have one thing going for them, and we know they're young and inexperienced, but that's pretty good bullpen right now. I mean, I don't know that they have a ton of experience in that bullpen, but they do have some talent down there. But they need O'Brien.
They do. And you know, there was always going to be a question about him, whether his durability would hold. And to his credit and to the benefit of the Cardinals, last summer when he got an extended run of good pitching health, we saw just how good he could be. But I didn't think that sort of put that issue behind him. I think that there was always going to be questions hanging about that because he's had so many injuries. So hopefully this is just a minor thing. But listen, one thing Chaim Bloom and his guys have done, they've assembled a lot of pitching depth. They've been picking up bullpen arms left and right, and they're going to have plenty in reserve to fill for some unexpected injuries like a Riley O'Brien if he has to be shut down for any kind of considerable time. I think they're still in pretty good shape there. You know, there really wasn't going to be – there's going to be like two jobs open in that bullpen before this. So they were in pretty good shape before this. I think they're still in pretty good shape.
And also, Matt, I know that yesterday J.J. Weatherholt, and maybe it was before or after we had spoken, but he talked a little bit about, you know, what his goal is for the season. Obviously, making the team is his number one goal, and the Cardinals are giving him every opportunity to do that. It kind of feels like right now he's already been slotted in, even though they can't publicly say that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, he's in the hitting groups, the guys who are going to be on the team. When kind of the A group of fielders are on one field and everybody else is on the other field, he's with them. There was a time yesterday where it was Burleson, Weatherholt, Wynn, and Gorman on one field together. Those were the only four guys, and other fields had everybody else working in and out. So this is J.J. Weatherholt's job to lose at this point in time, and I don't think anybody with the Cardinals thinks he's going to lose the job.
Matt, great stuff down there. We appreciate it. Excited for Libby. Libby, by the way, is going to be on the show tomorrow on the Gas House
awesome.
Gang. So we're excited to have Matthew on the program. Great stuff down there. We'll keep an eye on it. We also have you today at 5 o'clock, Redbird Rush Hour, as we get a little more Cardinals information rolling on the show. And then we go right into Billiken basketball, which we're going to talk about on this show a little bit later. Matt, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
You bet.
Bernie Nicholas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bago Loan, and by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
It's Bernie Miklas Day on Tuesday. We visit with Bernie. We have a great visit there with Matt Pauly, with Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman, the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com, and Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Bernie, what's been on your mind lately here with this Cardinals club? I mean, I saw that FanDuel, speaking of, because I know my man Chris talks about them, had them at 68.5 over under on wins. Hard Rock, I heard, had him at 69.5. Yeah, that stuff doesn't bother me, honestly. I mean, I
don't care.
I really don't care. Like, I of course I want them to do well. I'm not saying I care about wins and losses, but I kind of don't. Like, this season is about development. It's a win if they all rise. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I've been following projections for years just as a matter of curiosity. And the one thing I've found, you know, especially when it comes to Pecota, and I respect the heck out of Baseball Prospectus, don't get me wrong, but Pecota historically has always sort of been off in terms of their Cardinals projection. But I don't blame Pecota, for example, for, you know, projecting 66 wins. They have their methods, whatever. I think it's just like something we can all talk about. And some people get mad about it. I don't know why, because it literally doesn't mean a thing, because you settle the games on the field, not through the projection systems. But I think the Cardinals, look, as I said here today, because there could be developments during spring training that would change it, I think they're somewhere 74-75 win team. I think their offense is not very good. I think their offense might even be a tad worse. But I think their pitching is going to be better because they have a lot of starting pitching depth. They have a lot of options. They have guys in the minors that can figure into this rotation before the end of the season, maybe even sooner in the season. We'll wait and see. But one of the reasons why I like their starting pitching, and I'm convinced it will be better, is because last year when the Cardinals had a game, they had a game started by Palante, Michaelis, or Eric Fetty. Their winning percentage was around 378 or something. I mean, the numbers were, in fact, I was looking for the number. They only won 31 out of the 82 games started by those three guys. The Cardinals have options this year, unlike last year, to replace guys who are liabilities in the rotation. I think that makes will make a big difference in keeping that record respectable. Because if you can pitch, and if you're starting pitching is solid and strong and reliable, doesn't have to be Cy Young level, but if it's just reliable, you're gonna win games and overcome some offensive issues that you have. So that's kind of my quick read. And Ollie Marmol's one of the best at running a bullpen. The facts bear that out. But I'm also not going to be a phony and act like this offense, oh, I think this is going to be a breakout. No, I just can't go there. I'm going to have to see it because after last year and the fact that, you know, there haven't really been any additions, J.J. Weatherholt's going to be an addition. I think there's going to be a lot of challenges for this group offensively to show that internally several players are capable of taking a big step.
As far as that win total, it is not unreasonable to expect they'll overperform considering they did last year. And what, they were probably four games better? At least according to the Pythagorean, it said they were four games better than what their record probably should have been given their runs scored and the runs that they gave up throughout the course of the regular season. And you mentioned it. I think Ollie does a pretty good job with the bullpen, with the personnel he has. It's about that personnel actually performing. And as far as the win totals go and caring about what Pecota says or what any of these projections say, once you get past the disappointment or sadness that you might have of where the Cardinals are in their history, that we are talking about a team that very legitimately could only win 68 games and it'll be well under 500. Once you get past that and you think about and you focus on the fact that they are doing a rebuild here, whether they want to call it that or not, and within that rebuild, there are a lot of milestones and markers that we can look for them to hit, because the goal for this season, a little similar to last year, it's let's have some of these players, some of these younger players, get the repetitions, but hopefully make progress from April to the end of September so that you can look at the following year and go, okay, now we have a pretty good idea of what we have in house that we should hang on to and continue to build for the following season, and what we don't need or what we don't have and what we need to acquire. That's the goal for 2026. Figure out better what this team needs going into 2027. And once you get to that headspace and you realize this is where the Cardinals are, then who cares if they only win 69 games or 70? It doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is the progress J.J. Weatherholt makes, or Jordan Walker makes, or maybe Nolan Gorman, or some of these young pitchers. That's the only thing that matters this season.
Let me knock out a couple of these questions here. Is Lars Nootbaar at spring training yet? No, delayed. And Matt Pauly's talked about this from down in Jupiter. And Brendan Schaefer wrote a nice little piece over at STL Sports Central about that too, quoting everybody down there about, you know, the equipment that they need for Nootbaar to get his heel surgery recovery going. With all the craziness down there with the facilities being new, they just didn't have everything down there yet, so it was better for him to be recovering where he is. But that is going to happen soon. Bernie, this one's for you. Do you expect the Cardinals to trade Jojo Romero?
Well, as time goes on, it seems increasingly obvious that they'll sit tight with him and perhaps take a small gamble, moderate gamble, that he'll have another good season, he'll stay healthy, he'll pitch well, and they figure they can get for if it's successful, they would actually stand to benefit more at the trade deadline than they would right now. Because Chaim Bloom has shown he is not bashful about trading anybody. If he gets the right offer, he'll trade him. So the fact that Romero is still here tells me he hasn't fielded an offer that he thinks acceptable. So if he has to, he'll take his chances going into the season and then see what develops as they move closer to the trade deadline.
And this person just joining wanted to get a summary of our thoughts on Tony Clark stepping down. Yeah, I mean, basically it doesn't help. I mean, it's a bit of a step back, if you will, stepping down as the executive director of the MLBPA. Who they're going to have in the interim, you know, you would think probably Bruce Meyer. There's always that chance that it could be somebody else. But I think they're going to go with their chief negotiator, Bruce Meyer, which will rankle probably both sides, quite honestly. That guy does not mess around, Bern.
Matt Pauly said at the top of the show, I totally agree with it. The one thing about Tony Clark, I mean, people in his own union have criticized him. And, of course, anytime there's a labor fight, there's going to be criticisms of Rob Manfred and Tony Clark. But the one thing about Tony Clark and Rob Manfred is that, you know, when all the smoke cleared from the fireworks and the feuds and all that, they always, both times that they had to negotiate a CBA, they got a deal done. The first time was 2016, and they actually got it done hours before the deadline. They got it done in December. And then the last time, of course, it dragged on. I think Bruce Meyer was one of the reasons. And it carried on into spring training. And, of course, they lost a big chunk of spring training, but they didn't miss a regular season game. But the bottom line, Manfred and Clark could get to that point where they realized they squeezed as much as they could from their stance, and then they would hug it out and make a deal. I don't know that it's going to be that easy now.
Now back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling.
And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Back on it, the Gas House Gang with Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Bernie Miklas is with us every Tuesday and Thursday. Bernie, it's Tuesday, yeah. And that means college basketball, big night again. It feels like every night is big for two reasons. One, they're really good and they're fun and they're entertaining, but also they can't lose any of these if they want to keep their status. And they are 18th in the country. They are the talk of college hoops. And I got asked this by Bob Ramsey on Monday. He said, what do you think? He said, would they play in the NCAA tournament in St. Louis? And I said, if they run the table and they go 33-1, let's say, they run through the regular season, they win the A-10 tournament, 100% yes. And Jerry Palm, in his latest bracket at palmbrackets.com, here are his teams playing in St. Louis March 20th and 22nd. Iowa State against Navy, your middies.
All right.
He has Kentucky against UCLA. I'll tell you what, nobody would be sad about that, seeing Iowa State and Kentucky in town. He has Purdue against UT Martin in St. Louis. No Illinois in here, but Illinois maybe has a little more work to do. And SLU and SMU going at it with SLU as a 7 seed playing in St. Louis. How unbelievable would that be?
Hey, if they go 33-1, they deserve that reward. They really do. Even if they lose another game, I mean, I think they would be worthy of that reward, that gesture of respect. But yeah, I do agree, because I've following so many different metric systems, and just about all of them have SLU in the 6 to 8 seed range. So that's why they have to win out. And Stu Durando, who does an excellent blog, you know, Stu on SLU, it's on Substack. I mean, I think it's phenomenal, the work that he puts into that. But he was explaining in his most recent Substack about how one of the things that's happening with SLU is that the teams around them have been crumbling. I'm talking about Atlantic 10 teams. So in other words, some of the wins, quite a few of the wins they had earlier this season, aren't as valuable as they were at the time, because those teams have kind of lost ground and they've continued to drop in the ratings. So I think SLU may have a couple trap games remaining. I was inclined to say that about Rhode Island tonight, but Rhode Island's kind of really just been getting slapped around lately. I do think that VCU, even though that'll be a home game, I think they're dangerous. But I don't expect Coach Schertz and his team, with all the experience they have and just their overall team ethic, I don't expect them to take anybody lightly. It's just a matter of maybe them having a bad night and getting caught, because that happens to even the greatest team. So I hope they went out and they take any lingering questions out of the hands of the selection committee.
Yeah, I think the game that really concerns me the most is that Dayton one, just because it usually is difficult, and they just got folded up by the Billikens here when they played a couple of weeks ago, and then now SLU's going to have to go to their building and play. So that one does make me a little bit nervous. I almost wonder, guys, if they have, let's say, one more regular season loss, and then they end up not winning the conference tournament, I still think they're in really good shape. They may not get to have the luxury of playing in the St. Louis region, but maybe they will still be okay in terms of seeding. I don't know. Would they be an 8 or a 9 at that point? And then we're talking about losing two games, which still, you know, you're not going to get to 30 wins, but you'll get just 3 losses. That's not terrible.
If they lost a couple more games, I think that they would be okay. If they were an at-large and not win the A-10 tournament, they're going to sweat it out regardless because of what happened to Indiana State and what's happened to some other teams. My fear always on these things is that you get these bid stealers, these teams that come out of the ACC and the Big Ten and the SEC who weren't supposed to win and weren't supposed to be in the tournament, but make their magical run. Remember what NC State did a few years ago, where they came out of the ACC out of nowhere and they stole a bid. So it happens, but I think that SLU still should be fine. I mean, I really do.
Yeah, Indiana State was 28-6 when they got left out a couple of years
ago. Like that.
I mean, 6 losses, I guess I can see that. I still think they got snubbed, and they were the first one out, were they not?
Yeah, the Billikens should be fine. I would think so.
If you got 3 losses,
I like the sure thing. I'm with you guys too, though. You know, there are going to be some games on this schedule, and Josh Schertz will make sure. By the way, he wants to make sure. I think he'd like to blow somebody out in the first half. They've had a trend now of sort of playing along with these teams that clearly SLU has a target on its back. So teams are motivated and prepared to get them, but then they just end up, whatever it is, running out of gas, or they lose track of them, or SLU just adjusts better than they do, and they step on them in the second half and end up pulling away by a big number. It should be fun. Let me get back into a couple of questions that have popped up here about the Cardinals. This is RNB. I like this one. This is actually written as if it's a title of a book or an article. Do you guys think if Joshua Baez has a strong spring, he can make the team out of Jupiter? Bernie, I'm going to throw this your way because I love Baez. Not only what he's done at the plate, but the way that he carries himself. He looks like a future star.
My opinion, that would be overly ambitious because he hasn't played beyond double A. Mm-hmm. He had a breakout year there, saved his career, or I should say just put it on a entirely different and exciting trajectory with his plate discipline issues improving dramatically, and he's able to get to more pitches than he did before. But this is a guy who, you know, like unlike a J.J. Weatherholt, clearly could benefit from some time at AAA against more experienced pitchers who have the tricks of the trade and can kind of mess with a young player. I wrote something, I don't know how long it was ago, at STL Sports Central. I would say maybe within the last month, probably about a month ago, when I was saying, like, all right, here's what I look at, because it's a rebuilding team, there's going to be changes. Here's what I look at after the All-Star break and in terms of their lineup. And I had Baez in the outfield starting for the Cardinals after the All-Star break. I think that would be a more realistic goal in mind. And I'm not saying it's going to happen. But I think for him to start the season, I think that would be asking for – I think it would be unfair to him, frankly.
I really do. Totally agree. Yeah. And here's the other thing, Chris, and I hate talking about this, but it is going to happen. You're going to deal with injuries. You're just going to. You're going to deal with injuries. You're going to deal with slumps. But mostly injuries. I mean, we look at this team right now, and you're like, hey, you know what?
Yeah, it's all right.
They could hold their own here and there. Well, what happens if so-and-so gets hurt? Now what? You know, so there may be a need for a Baez.
Well, I forget about that. What concerns me the most is they were remarkably healthy from the pitching staff last year.
So sure
if
were.
It feels like if they are due for an injury, it's probably on the pitching side this time, don't you think? Because they got through the entire regular season without a single starting pitching significant injury, and there's just no way they get through that again. And well, no matter how good your training staff is, and the Cardinals have a pretty good one, to have avoided that all of 2025 is insanity.
Yes and no. They had an individualized plan for pitchers, and the goal was to do everything they could to limit injuries, but you also need to have some luck. But they did a great job proactively in doing what they could to limit injuries. But the other thing I would say, Chris, is that this goes back to what I said a few minutes ago. They had three absolutely horrendous starting pitchers in that rotation. And no matter what happened, they weren't going to take any of them out.
Yeah.
Even to the point where they blocked Michael McGreevy from entering that rotation. They stuck with Fetty. They stuck with Michaelis. They stuck with Palante. So, yeah, they might have an injury or two. But the difference between this year and last year, the Cardinals were stuck with who they had last year. There were no options, really, other than McGreevy. This season, they will have additional options. The starting pitching depth will be much better than it was a year ago.
Tink Hentz says he wants to be a starter still. What is your thought on that, Bernie?
I'd love it, but I think we all should be skeptical. I mean, he's never thrown more than 91 innings in a minor league season. So, you know, there's a lot for him to prove. But again, I think the Cardinals' pitching supervision and their performance plan for pitchers, I mean, they actually now have an injury prevention department for pitchers. They actually have a department for that. And I think they can find some stuff with Tink Hentz that might help them. I sure hope so.
Bernie Nicholas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan, and by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
Welcome back to the Gas House Gang with Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Our producers this afternoon, Matt Pajeski and Frank Ladd. Bernie Miklas with us every Tuesday and Thursday. I tell people all the time, not only do I love this guy like a big brother, but he might be the best deadline columnist I ever saw. And I saw him, too. I saw him late at night, man. Those games would end, and he would bang one out in, like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. Like, I don't know how you did it. Now you have a little more, like, a little more time to craft. I'm curious what you think, like how you decide you're going to write about something with this club and what you're thinking about at the moment.
Well, thanks for your compliment. I wish I was still as quick as I was. I do make some concessions to age. I'm no longer the fastest draw in the West. I have a funny story to tell about that some other time, but I just look for things that I think Cardinals fans are talking about or curious about. At STL Sports Central, I do write some columns that are non-Cardinals, but I pretty much write all Cardinals. because that's where the that is where overwhelmingly where the most interest is. And no one should ever be just misled by the fact that maybe the home attendance was down and it'll be down again this year. That's one way to measure fan engagement. But Cardinals fans are intensely interested in this team, even if they stay away from the ballpark. I've learned that. I write about something else. The numbers aren't even close to when I write about the Cardinals. The numbers are always big. So I just try to stay in the moment. And like what I'm doing, I've decided to do during spring training, and I started it yesterday. I'm not going to get too fancy. I'm just going to write. I'm going to like ask and answer like three or four questions a day in the column space. Like, for example, today, one of my questions might be, who should bat leadoff for the Cardinals? And then I'll kick that around. You know, things like that. Like, in other words, I'm not writing these deep think pieces. Spring training, it's action. There's always questions. There's always developments. There's always new people emerging. So I just want to ask, you know, pose questions and try to answer them to the best of my ability every single day. Like three questions, maybe five on some days.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, guys hanging out, right. You know, fans hanging out and just talking ball. And these are the questions that we all ask ourselves.
And it's amazing what you say about Cardinals fans. We give that a lot of credit, I think, a lot of time. And I think we give it the appropriate credit. This team or this city is so invested in this team no matter what. And you're right. They may not go to the ballpark. They may say, we're not going to spend money on the product right now, but we're going to watch it. And if you're talking about them, we're going to pay attention because they care. There aren't very many baseball markets in the country like that. There are a few, but a lot of those markets are more like football. If it's June, we can talk football. Let's talk football. Let's talk NFL all year long. It's kind of unusual when it comes to baseball that you've got a city, and not just a city, but a region full of people that are starving for baseball content all the time. And St. Louis is like that. And we should embrace that as much as possible because it is very difficult to get a city to care that much about its baseball team all year round.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. And let me tell you, it's well said. And let me tell you that they come all ages too. Like your grandma and grandpa, they know ball. I mean, they've seen a lot of Cardinal baseball. They've been to a lot of games. Listen to what they say. They've seen this team go through the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. Maybe not at this level of rebuild, but they've seen this team go through some rough patches. So it's important to listen to them. And we got to teach the young people, the young fans, what this game is all about, why it's appealing, some of its intricacies, but also the simple things about the game, why we love it so much. It's awesome. Anyway, I appreciate you guys. Great to talk some baseball with you and basketball, and we will do that again coming tomorrow. We've got a good one tomorrow on the Gas House Gang with Chris Ranji. For Bernie Miklas, I'm Tom Ackerman.